It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, Kool-Aids. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, from California. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about the FCB Femini advancing to the Champions League final. We're going to discuss Xavi staying on as the Barca manager, and we're going to review the Valencia match. Before we get into today's topics, I want to talk about our Patreon community. If you are craving more content from Barcelona and people from around the world, consider joining our Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get commercial-free episodes. You're able to be part of our international WhatsApp group, which is always a lot of fun, especially during the matches, and obviously help support the podcast. So if you're interested in joining, the link is in the show notes, and join our virtual Peña. All right, let's get into today's episode right after this brief break. Okay, as I said in the top of the show, we have a lot to get into, and joining me today is Remy Dixon from San Francisco. Remy, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Life is good. Just watched the Valencia game, so all right. We won it, bro.
Yeah, we did win it. And I think this is kind of one of the rarest things because we're almost doing an immediate reaction to the Valencia match that we just saw literally 10 minutes ago. We're on the same time zone. So I'm in California right now. You're in San Francisco. So we want to take advantage of this. But we have a lot to get into because, you know, when you last recorded with Craig after the Clásico, which was a great episode, I really enjoyed listening to you guys talk about the kind of the repercussions and also like the future going forward about the Clásico and how we lined up with Madrid. But, you know, obviously Tuesday, Wednesday, the news comes out that Xavi was going to stay on as manager. And again, you know, just to kind of go through the timeline of this, you know, in January 27th, he basically announced that he was leaving the club, puts all this speculation across the board about who's going to come. We were talking about it for what, the last 2 months, about who we thought was going to be, Rafa Márquez, you know, Hansi Flick, many other candidates as well. And now, last week, they come to an agreement that Xavi's going to stay one more season. So kind of what was your immediate reaction when you saw all this kind of, I mean, I feel like it was leaked, confirmed on Twitter, and then it was, you know, announced. So how kind of you felt about this development of Xavi staying on for one more season?
Yeah, I mean, I think my immediate reaction was I had a feeling it was going to happen. The second part of that reaction was like, it almost felt like this was done purposefully. I wouldn't put it past them to have tried to take the heat off of Xavi by announcing he's leaving, knowing that he was never really going to leave. Taking that aside, I think parts of it makes sense from a financial perspective for the club, like really, who are you going to get to pay, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think Rafa Márquez would have been a good signal that we are focusing on youth and focusing within. I don't see the lack of upper level experience as a big negative for him, seeing as to how we have a lot of young players that he's very familiar with. Pep Guardiola came in through our system like that. Pep did not coach a big squad before he started coaching Barcelona, and we saw what happened. Not saying Rafa is Pep, but if you're focusing on the youth, you pull Rafa Márquez up. I think it could have made sense. But yeah, immediate reaction was just like, something about this feels fishy. I'm not happy about it. I don't think it's a step forward for us. I think there's some things that he's done well, but at the same time, I think the game today, and we will get there, but the game today shows very much why Xavi was not the right person to move us forward.
Yeah, and I also, you know, as our conspiracy theory, right, as we believe that this could have been a plan from the start, I definitely would say 40% of me believes that it could have been a plan in place like that. Obviously, financially, it makes sense. Stay at the Montjuic one more season. You're asking Xavi to take one for the team, essentially, to help be the bridge until we move back to the Camp Nou and to get, a upgraded manager. But, you know, obviously we'll get into the Valencia match. But again, I just think making the upgrade into the manager is one move that you can make that automatically gets a 5 to 10% bump on all the players on the roster. Because, you know, when I look at the roster, because I, you know, obviously you see on Twitter and everyone's like, we need this player, we need that player. You know, everyone loves picking free agents, the best free agents that we can. But, you know, if we were to stay with the same roster essentially and really emphasize more of the youth, like Fermin, and obviously Lamine Yamal is going to get more playing time, you're telling me a coach, like a better coach tactically, can't get that 5 to 10% bump, then all of a sudden we're more consistent on a weekend and weekend basis. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. Again, I'm kind of disillusioned with the board. I think Laporta is such a, I don't know, like I just feel like he wakes up some days and he's just like, yep, we're going to fire Xavi. Nope, we're going to keep Xavi. Nope, we're going to fire Xavi, you know? And you can kind of just see the background, you know, that there were, they feel like they made this amazing decision. I don't know, you know, you see the press conference and the way they shake hands and stuff. It's like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Well, I think what was telling was like Laporta said, oh, so many of the fans are so happy that Xavi is staying. It's like this like disconnect from, and look, I'm not saying we speak for all fans. I'm not saying our group speaks for all fans, but I know a lot of fans across different groups that I'm a part of. And very few of them are like, yes, Xavi is the person to lead us forward. So, I mean, if I take across the three or four different Barca groups that I am somewhat affiliated with or a part of, with so many different people being negative towards Xavi, the question becomes like, how many people are really like, yes, this is the way we should go. This is the kind of play that we should have. It's just, I don't think a lot of people were here going, yes, Xavi is staying, although Laporta likes to paint it that way.
Yeah. Again, it's just, you know, this is the problem with too many chefs in the kitchen. You know, you got too many people on this board that are making decisions like this, and there's no clear leader, you know, and sometimes it's good to have a dictator, you know, sometimes it's good to have someone, just one sole focused person making all those decisions, you know. You know, so far, I don't have this belief in Deco as a sporting director. I don't have a clear, you know, it's kind of like, I feel maybe Laporta maybe have gotten lucky the first time when he was a presidency and just kind of now seeing the way he hasn't been able to adapt to new things with Barcelona and being more forward thinking in this idea, because this whole season has just been so up and down with this idea of Xavi staying or leaving. And especially, you know, when Xavi announced that he was leaving and saying, oh, all the credit, you know, of the performance is because they know I'm leaving, you know, and all the storylines that we've been seeing with Xavi. And again, we're going to have one more season of this, Remy.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that he can say, yes, this bump in form has been because I've announced I'm leaving, and not understand why that means he should leave. Like, I can't imagine me being like, oh, this party was bad, and then I said I was going to leave, and all of a sudden the party got better. Like, and not taking that as like a, yeah, you should probably leave type situation, you know? And again, we're getting to the Valencia game later. It's hot, so it's definitely on the tip of our tongues. But interesting to see that once he announced he's staying, we go back to playing the very similar way to how we were playing right before he announced he was leaving. It's just,
yeah. Well, before we kind of close this up, you know, the board wanted him to sack his brother, bring in some other veteran type of coaches. And again, Xavi stood, you know, firm on saying, no, you can't do that. And he's staying on. The only admission that he's allowing is the new physio staff. Sure, that's good. But man, it's still about the tactical staff that Xavi is defending and getting these results, right? And I felt the board could have pressured more to have Xavi get rid of his brother. You know, I understand his family, so obviously he's going to stand for him. But, you know, from an admission part of like, okay, you want to stay. So that's why I'm kind of confused with this, because maybe there is more to that. There was a plan in place to this, And there is, okay, you're going to stay on, but you have to do something with the physio staff.
The physio staff is so necessary, but I feel like that's like a concession kind of thing. Like that's, it is like, this is just such a short-sighted view taken by the board, because I think what they are looking at is the financial situation.
Yeah.
And I get that. I understand it. But at the same time, we're hearing that they're going to try to go after Bernardo Silva. They're going to try to go after Joshua Kimmich. Like, if you're looking at the financial situation, why are you, even if it's speculation, like, you should be coming out and saying, you know what, we're not going to spend anything. This team is good enough as is. We're going to try to keep what we have, and we're going to try to build from the youth and move forward. Like, you can't be on one hand saying, oh, Xavi's the one to take us forward, knowing that you're doing it for financial reasons, and then on the other hand, being like, oh, we're going to go try to get him all the players he's asking for.
Sure.
Xavi as a manager, if he's asking for more players, means he's not a good enough manager. There are managers out there that could take this team that we currently have and do so much with them. There are teams out there. Are you saying Leverkusen has a better team than we do?
Yeah.
They absolutely do not. They have a manager who knows how to use those pieces better than ours does. But like, you can, if we keep playing the way that we're playing under this manager, you can get Messi in his prime back. And that's probably the only thing that would save you, right? Like, that's probably the only thing that would save you.
Because those are the moments of individual brilliance that he'll score a goal that is out of the plan, right? Those are the type of things.
Exactly.
I mean, the thing, like, the great point to bring up with the Kimmich and Bernardo Silva, like, where do they go? Where do they play? And do they really make our team better? I mean, that's the thing, right?
They sell jerseys, and Xavi says he wants them. But, like, Gundogan, I would argue, and again, I'll get to this when we talk about this Valencia game, but I would argue that Gundogan has been the better of the three new players added, and he's been a shell of who he was.
Yeah.
I don't think he's at, like, there have been very few games where I've thought Gundogan is playing like the Man City Gundogan, or Gundogan has really, like, taken this game and just pushed it to the next level or really helped us, right? So all that to say, it's like, you can get these players, but where are you going to put them? What are you going to do with them? How are, like, this moment of independent brilliance that we're talking about, I've been saying it for a very long time. That is Xavi's plan. It's to control the ball and hope that somebody, right now it's Lamine Yamal, but I was saying this last year and everybody was like, oh no, this wasn't the case. But it's like, Dembele made Xavi look better.
Yeah, yeah.
If you took out Dembele from that team last year, you just have a very good defense and a side-to-side game. You need somebody like Lamine Yamal, like Dembele, to attack. Even if you don't think they're attacking well, the fact that they are attack-minded, I'm pretty sure the instruction is every other player needs to hold the ball and pass it back. And that one player is the only person that can just like go and attack and do whatever. That's a weird strategy, but I'm pretty sure that's how this team works, because when you take out those players, everybody else looks ridiculous. They just pass the ball back and forth. So all that to say, it's like the plan is hope for independent brilliance. So Messi's the only thing that could save this team in his prime.
Again, it'll be, I mean, this summer is going to be an absolute nightmare. It's going to be like, oh, Haaland, Mbappe, like all the rumors of players.
Yeah. Dude, you already know I hate
rumors. I know.
I hate dealing with them. It's just like all of it is so annoying. And especially it's worse because we really don't have the money.
I know. Like, that's the thing. I mean, there is something to the brilliance of not being transparent of the finances, because then you just allowed the fan base to dream, you know, dreaming is free, baby, you know? And
that's true, but it's also like sad, because at the end of the day, you have a fan base that cares about this club and can understand, hey, we might have to go through some years of like austerity in order to come out better on the other side.
Yeah.
I don't think the fan base would be like, no, we'd rather the club dissolve and you sell all of our assets.
Not at all.
Nobody wants that. So if you were to say, as PK said, we're going to go with the youth, La Masia is the core of this club. If you were to say, we're going to focus on these young kids, we're going to get some pieces that will augment them. But you know what? They're not going to be big names. You're probably not going to know them, but these are the years we need you as fans. to really stick with us and we're going to build towards something. If you did that, I think you have the fan base behind you. But what you're doing here is just like, oh yeah, we're going to get the best. We're going to get a big name next year. We're going to get a big name this other year. And we're going to win the Champions League in the next year. It's like, it's just not going to happen.
Like, imagine if Laporta came out with like a plan, like a presentation saying, look it, this is where we're in the hole in. These are the players I want to sign. We're going to be in Montjuic, this is what we're earning. But we need all Kool-Aids to get behind us, to support this La Masia, you know, player movement while we get through and return back to the Camp Nou. You're telling me that, I mean, I'd be like, okay, look, I understand what's going on. This happens in professional sports, Remy, all the time. You can't always be on top for 60 years. Like, you have moments of bajon, you know, that's just naturally that's going to happen. And if you're telling me that the bajon of FC Barcelona is going to be doubling down on La Masia prodigies, and maybe we're competing with La Liga, but we're just not there, I mean, we're going to take that, right? I mean, it's not like you're going to be in 10th or 12th place, you know? We still have talent on this team.
Yeah. And we still have, it's not just the kids, right? It's not just Lamine Yamal and Cabarsi. We still have a good group of young, good players. Pedri, Gavi, but like even Koundé, Araujo. Like, people talking about Araujo leaving and all this stuff. It's like, that would be so stupid to sell an Araujo so you could get a Bernardo Silva or something like that. Like, those things don't make sense. But we still have even the Frankie situation, right? It's like, if you're talking saleable assets, what about just not getting new players that are like going to cost you more and are older? Like, just don't. Like, keep the players that you have, keep the core that you have, and add the younger players that are coming up that are really good. Like, I was just watching something. One of my Arsenal friends the other day was like, oh, we have this kid who just scored like 15 goals in his last like three games. He's 16, but he's playing on for the U18s. And I'm like, that's great that you have a 16-year-old that's playing so well. That's amazing. I saw his goals. Cool. But he's also playing against children. We have 16-year-olds that are playing in the Champions League against adults and schooling them.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So it's like our 16-year-olds are levels above everybody else's 16-year-olds. Like, definitely. Our 16-year-olds are playing the type of game that you could – if you keep a Lamine Yamal healthy and you build around – you keep a Cubarsí healthy, you keep a Font healthy, you keep a Fermín López healthy, you build around, you're not needing that many other pieces. And the experience, when you talk about experience, La Masia's kids are smart. They are experienced. It's not like, oh, they come in and they just lose their heads. Like, these kids are brilliant, right? So it's crazy to think that there isn't a plan, and what the plan seems like it is just like very unsustainable. And the best we can hope for is a semifinal in the Champions League. I guess winning the league, but like, you give Real Madrid another year and a half, if that, and if things click next year for them,
forget about it. Yeah, because you brought up a great point in the last pod with you and Craig about the confidence that the team gets from Ancelotti. Right. And I think that goes a long way in when you're, you know, trying to, you know, when the season's so long, right? And you just have a plan. I mean, when we, especially here and when I'm in Spain and so forth, the media, and there's just little to nothing being talked about Madrid as compared to Barcelona from the back room, you know. The players all seem content. The players in Madrid are getting playing time. It's a very balanced squad. And so there's, as compared to Barcelona, where it's always the soap opera of players, you know, Felix wants to stay, Gonzalo, and all these things. And it's like, it's just so much just distractions going on with FC Barcelona from top to bottom, you know. It's just, and I was hoping with a new manager, you know, obviously I was more of the Hansi Flick because I just thought we needed a complete change. But again, this is going to continue for the upcoming season. So, you know, from a football fan perspective, I'm not looking forward to it, but as a content creator, it'll always be easy for us to have content. So
I mean, you know, it's one of those things. Like, I've had friends that are like, I'm done with this club, like, this is too annoying. And I'm like, look, the type of person I am, I'm stuck. This is where I'm gonna be. But like, I think the level of like passion and care. Like, I feel like those are the things that you start tamping down a bit, because like, can't keep just like watching them just like destroy my weekend, you know? Like, but it's one of those things where like, this club, I love this club, I love this badge. I wasn't there during the low point pre-Ronaldinho, pre-Pep. I was there for a little bit, but I was still a little young and wasn't really aware. But as you said, there's like these highs and lows. All we hope for as fans is that our team has a plan to come out of the low in a way that helps us get back to the high, right? Yeah. And the sad thing is it doesn't feel like that's the case. There's always hope. I'm always going to watch a game and be like hopeful, but I'm not going to be naive to like what I'm seeing in front of me. You're not going to, as Craig will say, piss in my pocket and tell me it's raining. Like, so that's where I'm at right now. It's like,
well, just be glad that you're in USA, California, because you watch the game, you turn off the game, you know. In Spain, it's just constant bombardment of the sports and the news of FC Barcelona. And that's one of the reasons why I live there. I love the football culture, but at a point too, it's just too much, you know. There's just,
well, you
too
also
much.
Live in Madrid, so I can imagine how that sucks, just being like, because I'm sure they're not kind to Barcelona over there.
Sure. But also, also when you're just watching the news and stuff, just a constant bombardment, you know. It's like, you know, if I were to make a pie chart, essentially, it would be like 10% football analysis, and then the 90 of just the background and the what's happening on the touchline and just all that kind of stuff, which is interesting to a point. But at the same time, with FC Barcelona and Xavi just kind of being so out of control, as we've talked about with his yellow cards and red cards, there's going to be another season of that as well. So, you know, again,
I would say at the very least, I hope that he doesn't do that. I hope that he learns. And like, if that's the change that he makes, that'll be good. But like, that's an easy one to implement. Like, you could at least stop doing that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know how hard it is to change stripes. So we'll see. We'll see. All right. So we're going to do a reverse compliment sandwich. We're going to talk about the Femini real quick, because the Femini advanced to the Champions League final over the weekend. It was a tough match. And again, Chelsea, you know, fine, they're a decent club, but man, they parked the bus. They had basically two shots on goal. Barcelona were able to get a 1-0 lead through Aitana Bonmatí's shot that got a deflection, and then they got a penalty, which was a penalty. I mean, it is a penalty. And then the coach of Chelsea, who's now going to be the U.S. women's national team coach, saying it was the worst call in Champions League history. False, right? Yeah, First of all, you can't just park the bus and expect like these decisions not to affect it. You know, maybe it could have been a yellow. Okay, fine. But it was definitely a penalty. And I just want to go on with this, Remy. I mean, you know, our love for the Femini, just impressive again to come through, because they did not play their best games on the first two legs.
No. I mean, I would argue that Chelsea's strategy worked really well in the first leg. So two things, actually. Most of the times that I've seen the Femini not do well, it's like 80% us doing it to ourselves and like 20% the other team. The first leg, I would say it was like 60% us doing it to ourselves, 40% Chelsea. Salma Paluelo had a poor first game. And I honestly think her second game, that last chance where she like was basically open and tried to cut it back and do something, but like she was basically one-on-one with the keeper and like just, I think she was trying to chip it over her or something. And like she just missed her touch. I felt like that summed up both of her games. She just was not on it these last two games. But that said, Chelsea's strategy was good. The thing for me with the second leg was like, if Chelsea had been peppering our goal, having a bunch of chances and actually like coming at us in a way that I would be like, maybe it was unfair to them that they lost the way they did. It wasn't. Those were two yellow cards. You don't go in on a tackle like that if you're already on a yellow. Yeah. Like that was always going to be a second yellow. So that's one. The PK was a PK. That's another thing. But it wasn't like Chelsea had so many chances and they just like were unlucky. They were not good this game. Like they try to sit and get spring forward on a counter. We nullified that. we played way better and we got the things that we deserved. We were always attacking. Because we were attacking, they had pressure on them. They made silly fouls. That got them the red card. And then because we were attacking, we put them in a situation, they gave us a penalty, and then we got the second goal. So it's not to say, look at this and be like, oh, like Barca got help. It's like, no, you would have been lucky to have gone into to overtime on that game. Had we had those things not happen, you would have been very lucky to go to PKs in that game. If all things didn't go well. Right. So overall, it's great to see that we pulled this out. Cause I do think this was one of the hardest games.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I was going to just also add to that is, you know, just talking about Selma real quick. I think one of the things that she needs to improve for the upcoming season is to have her first touch and decision-making more like Graham Hansen, where I think a lot of the times when she's not in space and she has to hold up play and stuff, she has like seven options and she's trying to go through all of them like at the same time, you know? And I think that's, you know, obviously the detriment to some of her goal scoring success or lack of success when the ball's being held up. And I think also Chelsea did a great job of parking the bus, because one of the things, as you said, with the Femini is when they do get into space, that's where they create the chaos. And Chelsea didn't allow that to happen very often. Mm-hmm. As we've seen before with the men as well, when you park the bus against them and you have everything in front of you and you don't have a Messi, I mean, we do have good players on the Femini, obviously, but you slow it down and all of a sudden the pressure mounts up minute by minute. That's what happened in the first leg, essentially. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's going to be a really, really tough match against Lyon. We still haven't beat Lyon in the Champions League. The times that we've been through the Champions League was because Lyon got knocked out before. There's something mentally with Lyon with us, so that's going to be interesting. Lyon advanced through PSG. Again, the final is going to be May 25th. So, again, the Femini, I think it's also a good thing that they lost against Chelsea, because that also kind of resets the win streak. You know what I'm saying? So they're not having this pressure. But it'll be interesting to see how they match up with Lyon. But again, I think the team is still capable of winning the Champions League and still do another treble, which is incredible. And I also think the manager, Himeldes, when he came out with a new formation, he added another midfield to overflood and create that pressure and to have three back. I think that was one of those nice moves, because from the get-go, we were attacking. And again, like you said, when you put that pressure on and you create those chances, you can only be so solid on defense. It's so taxing mentally, you know?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I don't know if you have any final thoughts.
I mean, I'll say Graham Hansen didn't play her best game. And she got pulled out towards the end there, which was interesting in such a big game, right?
Yeah.
There was a part of me that was like, are we missing a different plan, right? When you had Oshuala, who I really liked, and she was getting less playing time towards the end, but she was still like a really fast route one type striker that you could get the ball up to and change things around. Selma's more of a ball to feet. Like, she's more of a skillful, honestly, she's more of a winger.
Yeah. For sure.
To be honest. And so when she's playing up top, you kind of lose something on the wing, not 100%, but she's just not there yet as a pure nine. And I just felt like there were times in this game before we really got the goal where it was just like, are we just missing a different trick, right? Are we missing the piece that we had that you could just be like, okay, when all this possession stuff isn't working, let's get it to a route one, number nine. So that was a thing. But, you know, in the end, we worked it out. Leon's going to be interesting. I think Emma Hayes has given them probably another blueprint. I would hope that they go in there just being cocky and thinking that we're the same team and they can do what they want to do. But my fear is that Emma Hayes has given them somewhat of a blueprint, and in a one-off game, you know, we're going to have to dig deeper, and hopefully we have a plan B in this one when Lyon either tries to do what Chelsea did, which they are a very savvy team. I could see them doing that more so than I could see them letting us play open.
Yeah. I think, with Lyon, I would say they're just a little bit better talent-wise than Chelsea. So maybe they could park the bus a bit, but they'll maybe use those release points much better than Chelsea did. Because when Chelsea had those counters, they were, as you, I mean, they just stalled out very quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Going back to the Selma point that you point out, yeah, she's definitely a winger for sure. But again, this goes to the point of and we'll go right into the Valencia match in a second, because this is my other point. You know, sometimes having a 10 and two forwards up top is much better than using width, you know? Like, for example, in the Chelsea match, you're telling me, like, if you put Putelis as the 10 behind them, right? You have someone that's physical, that's good. And then you use Graham Hansen and Selma as the two forwards in the front. All of a sudden, that changes the dynamic, you know, the way that you attack, because now Putelis can shoot from the box. You have the speed of Selma. And I would sacrifice the width to try to go route one, you know, and use that speed, you know? And let's just go right into the Valencia match, because my first thing, too, is with Fermin. You know, I'm really enjoying what he's doing. I don't know if it's just because he tries hard and you can see it. I know that sounds really silly, but you can just really see the effort that he puts in, the shifts that he kind of has done in the last 10 matches or so. But I just think he would really flourish as a 10 to help set up the forwards behind, you know, that. I mean, how are you seeing Fermin lately? And obviously, he's definitely solidifying his place for next season.
Yeah, it's funny you were talking about effort, and I think the announcers were saying he's like kind of like Gavi and how he his effort, and it's interesting to think of both of them as like two sides of the same coin kind of thing, but one's a bit more attacking and one's a bit more like defensive. Like I could see Gavi being a bit more of a stay back to midfielder, while Fermin is a more of an attacking midfielder. Fermin, I thought he was very good this game. I love his energy and effort. I think the thing with Fermin is he makes these runs that it just feels like it's not his instruction. It just feels like that's just how he plays. And I think, again, this is one of the things where I'm like, and I know he was playing a different team before, but this is one of the reasons why I feel like we should just promote Rafa, because I feel like you have these players come up and it feels like they're doing things that like Xavi's not telling them to do. And it's when you look at Fermin versus a Gundogan and you look at just how different those two are playing and how much more attacking Fermin is, at times I'm like, it just feels like Gundogan is like, I heard what the manager told me and I'm doing it. Whereas Fermin's like, yeah, I heard that, but this space is open. I'm going to go there, you know? And so it's, yeah, he's great. That goal that he had was superb. Like,
yeah,
amazing goal.
I think also with Fermin, as we saw in the Champions League and before Araujo got sent off and so forth, like you said, the moments of brilliance, right? He's finding those gaps and he's actually taking those gaps. He has the savviness to always kind of be in the same position. Could I say maybe a Catalan young Thomas Muller style, you know, just kind of finding those gaps? Because when I think about Fermin, I don't know what his ultimate position is in a 4-3-3, but if we were to say a 4-4-2 diamond, let's say, I mean, he's right there at the top as a number 10 to distribute and to find those goals. Again, that's why I'm so confused about, you know, Remy, when we talk about modern football and spacing and formation and tactics, it's like, I feel like you can still achieve the spacing that you ultimately want, but you can use different formations, you know, quote unquote, different formations to get the best out of your players. Like how many players
require having a plan and tactics.
But I mean, think about the team that we have. How many players are really in the 4-3-3 system, you know? Like Lewandowski, no. Rafinha, sure. Ferran, no. Like, you know, you just go down the list and it's like, but if you manage it, you're going to get the most out of everything. And I just don't.
I feel like you also have to remember though, this isn't Xavi's preferred system. His preferred system is actually worse for our players than like, actually, theoretically speaking, this kind of, no, it's not. Because his preferred system is the 4-5-2.
Yeah.
With like four or five midfielders and two wingers, but like, or two attackers, but that doesn't ultimately work. But if he had all the players available to him, that's what he would play, and he would play it all the time.
Yeah,
just because it worked that one game.
Well, let's get it. Okay, so obviously for me, obviously one of the highlights of the match today, and the Valencia as FC Barcelona beat Valencia. What was it, 4-2? Lewandowski had a hat trick. I was joking around the WhatsApp group. That's like the first time Lewandowski showed up in what, 10 matches or so, having a direct impact. So obviously Lewandowski, another, I would probably say he's probably man of the match because of the goals. But the other thing I kind of want to really touch on is this the most dangerous we've ever looked on corner kicks in a match? Because we actually took corner kicks and not really doing the short. I still think we have a ways to go to be more consistent, because I really hate the low ball front post corner kick. But when we did throw it in, we got two goals off of it. So,
yeah, well, okay. Let's pull it back to the core of the situation here. Their second string goalkeeper was terrible.
Correct.
They're like before the Lewandowski header for his second, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that keeper had come out and like flapped at something, and like it was just like, oh, this guy's gonna give up a goal. And even the announcers were like, oh, he doesn't like to catch the ball. Like, because somebody shot it at him, and it wasn't even like a great shot, but he kind of like batted it down, and I was like, no, this guy's got mistakes written all over him. So I think part of us looking this dangerous on the corners could be due to the fact that that goalkeeper was just flapping at everything and not really shutting anything down in the way that their first string goalkeeper was. That being said, I feel like, for me with this game, like I put it in the chat earlier. I was like, yo, this is the return of Xavi ball. Before the goal, it was 20 minutes in or something. They had already had like two chances, and we were slowly passing the ball back and forth. And yes, that's how we got our first goal. Firmino ends up making a run into that space. Rafinha ends up putting a beautiful ball in, but it's just so interesting to think of how, like, one, how is that not Lewandowski making a run to that space?
Yeah.
But it's like that goal came in at like 20 something minutes in, after we just looked so predictable. We looked like obviously, yes, Valencia is gonna hold back and wait for the counter, but how quickly you move the ball, you can control that. And it seemed like we were just told, hey, they're going to sit back. So what you do is you just slowly pass the ball back and forth until something happens, then you do it. But like, it was just so predictable. And I, that's why, like, when the goals happened, yes, individual error from Ter Stegen, silly, absolute nonsense, right? But like, happens. Araujo's PK that he gives away, silly. Jesus. Individual error, absurd. However, what put us in those positions? The thing that put us in those positions is because we were not moving the ball quick enough. We were not building quickly enough. We were not putting them under the pressure, and then they would get it, and then they would toss it back over, because we would push up so far. Because when that whole team is pushed back, all we do when we're slowly passing the ball side to side, we're passing it back, and all those defenders are pushing up, right? So like, as soon as they get the ball, they can hit it over, and there's only like one or two defenders there because everybody's been pushed up, because our whole team was just waiting to see what was going to happen with the ball, right? So like, I'm not trying to sit here and say everything's Xavi's fault, but at the same time, if we're playing a different game, if we're moving the ball quicker, if we're not making it so that our whole defense pushes up and waits for their defense to settle, I think we're in a different situation. We're not making those types of mistakes.
Again, I'm going to ask you this: with why do we have to have such a high line? I mean, we're not good enough on defense. Our concentration on defense and the recklessness that we play. Again, Araujo with the awful tackle. I mean, all he has to do is run with that guy. That guy's not scoring.
His touch was bad. His touch. Like, he touched it into the goal too close, but like, it wasn't like a good touch. And his second touch that he was about to take wasn't good. Like, he, like, probably two steps before the tackle, it was like, oh, nothing's gonna happen here. And then you see Araujo lunge, and you're just like, well, now they're going to get a PK. Yeah. Like, nothing was going to happen.
I mean, just going back to the Champions League match, this match, Araujo just needs to, like, I don't know what his deal is lately. Like, with the run that he was coming in, he came in as though they were not even to call anything on him. You know,
he came in hot.
Yeah, he did come in hot. And again, as we always say, risk versus reward. Like, what is the point, right? You just have to defend him. I mean, you saw Kubarsi on one of the one-on-ones, Pedri on the one-on-one. When you run with him, it's so difficult to score a goal with that type of run. And again, with the defense, I just understand why we have such an extreme high line. Our defense isn't good enough. Our midfield isn't good enough right now. Like, what's the risk and reward in that? We can still play, what, like 10 steps behind and see in front and still have...
here's the thing. I think this comes down to, I think, what a lot of people probably aren't thinking of. Valencia gave Xavi the ball. Valencia said, we know how you're going to play, so we're just going to let you have it. We had 80% possession going into the halftime. Like, I was looking at it because I was like, have we even had enough shots? Like, we had 11 shots, but only 3 were on target. But, like, 80-something percent possession, that's a team giving you the ball. Like, yes, we're much better than Valencia, but it was very clear their plan was sit back, give them the ball. They're only going to pass it left to right. That's all they're going to do. They're not going to pass it quickly. They're going to pass it slowly, wait. And then when you get the ball, especially the goalkeeper, that pass that he hit, the one that Ter Stegen messed up, that's clearly the plan.
Like, yeah, yeah.
The way he – that was beautiful, the pass. But, like, it's one of those things where you're just like, if a team lines up against us and goes, they're predictable, here's what they're going to do, and here's how we're going to counter that. That is why you play such a high line. Like, you're saying, why are we playing such high lines? Because, like, Xavi just plays into every manager that, like, lets him play his way.
Yeah.
Every manager looks at Barca and goes, Xavi's going to play one way. We'll let him play that way because we know how to counter it. And that's the problem. Like, Xavi does not adapt quick enough or even adapt enough. That you think about it, when did Ferran Torres come in the game? In, like, the 80th minute.
Yeah.
Like, we had a man up. We're clearly just like, we don't need 4 defenders anymore. And you're still keeping 4 defenders in when we have a man up until the 80th minute? For what? For what purpose?
I mean, these are all, I mean, this match of Valencia was just this is like the perfect summary of a choppy ball game, you know? Just the idea of, we're not Barca of 5 years ago where we can just roll up against the Valencia and assume that when they have a counter that they're not good enough to score against our defense. So that's out the window. The other thing, as you mentioned, the slowness of what we do, it's so easy to defend. It's so easy to defend when they're going to side to side, you know?
Like, I I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm just saying, it's so infuriating because, like, you can watch this game, you could watch a replay, and you would see how many times Cancelo or Yamin Lamal was open on the wing, wide open. And especially one time, we get the ball, Koundé has the ball. He, like, slowly moves it over to Araujo. Cancelo's been open this whole time. But, like, as we're slowly moving it to the left side of the field, their defense is shifting over and shifting over. So then we pass it to Cancelo, and they have a defender there. But that defender wasn't there, like, 6 passes ago. And there was one time Gundogan, who, again, and I think this is my issue with Gundogan, this game specifically kind of encapsulates it all for me. He is good enough to hit a ball across the field to a player that's wide open on the wing. All of our players are good enough to trap that ball and do something with it. There was one time where Gundogan looked up, saw Cancelo. There had been other times where he'd seen him before, but he would just pass it short. One time he saw it, passed it to Cancelo. Cancelo cut it back in, and we almost scored off of that. Like, we could have been doing that every play because it was on every single time. And it's just crazy to me that, like, it doesn't happen. Like, what's Gundogan doing as a player? What's Xavi doing as a manager to not call these guys over and be like, hey, this is on, exploit it? Like, that has to be Xavi saying, you know what, keep the ball as much as you can. I mean, even Sergio Roberto, there was a play with Lamine Yamal where Lamine passes it, he passes it back to Lamine passes it to him. Like, the whole time, Cancelo's open, the whole time we could have done something quicker. It's like, why are you passing it to the same player three times? He's standing right next to you.
Yeah. I mean, you know how it is. Like when you play, you know, I want to say, let's use indoor, because I think indoor is a good analogy for maybe our experience in this type of possession, right? So when you play indoor and you're a far superior team, they give you possession, you're moving around, it's really hard to score a goal when they are parking the bus and you're trying to work it around because you can't find the gaps. You're not using the spaces, right? And so the reason why you want to skip the ball, like let's say like to Cancelo, for example, is to put the defense in a position where they have to immediately shift. And then also maybe Cancelo can go back the other way. And also you find a hole, right? Someone's moving, Firmino's moving. Exactly. The idea that Xavi always wants to keep the possession of the short ball as opposed to exploit the defense to score goals, to me is baffling, because the idea is if you score two goals, now the team is going to chase, and then you have more openings, you continue to hold the possession, then you're probably going to maybe be able to score the goal. So I always find it such a weird dynamic that he wants to always keep the position. Now, as we mentioned many times before, like with Kubarsi making those passes, with Fermin making those runs, you know, because maybe they're doing that individualistically and it stands out to us, right? Maybe that's one of the things that Xavi's probably telling them not to do, right? Because if Gundogan's not making that pass, there's something to that maybe that he can't, you know, he's getting strict instructions from Xavi to keep it short and to keep it thing. But again, what's the point? You know, I mean,
yeah, I mean, I would like to think that Xavi's actually a really good manager and all these players are just like not listening to him and doing their own thing. But yeah, like that would be crazy to me for this caliber of player, right? Like these are not players that like don't see it. They see it and they know they can hit it. So I would have to be under the impression that Gundogan went from Pep to Xavi and stopped making those plays that he would have made under Pep because Xavi's telling him not to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and as you said, it's like it's crazy to think that like your whole game plan is to wait till the defense has settled and have parked the bus. They've parallel parked. It's fine. They checked over their shoulder. They've had time to like remove it and make sure it's all good. Like before you try to do anything, it's, as I think I said this a while ago, it's like he's literally like one of those old school like fighters that is like, oh, let's be gentlemanly about it. Let's wait till you're settled. We're not going to catch you on your back foot. We're not going to like attack you too quickly to where you can't recover. We're going to wait till you're set, and then we're going to try to score. And if we can't score while you're like standing in front of the goal with all your defenders, then who knows? We suffered.
Yeah. You know,
then we suffered, or it's the ref's fault. But it's like a game like this where even like the funny thing about the Lewandowski hat trick is, you know, you tell anybody, oh, we won 4-2, and it's like, oh, like, clearly Barca did what they had to do. Like, but honestly, Barca didn't deserve to win this game. Even with Valencia having 10 men, we didn't deserve it. Now, I said it at halftime. I fully expected a win. It would have been crazy for us to have lost this game. I did not think we would lose it. I thought Lewandowski would probably do something. Like, but do we deserve it? No. And we didn't win because I think we were like that much better. I think we won because they had 11, they had 10 men.
Yeah,
and their worst goalkeeper.
The worst. The worst. Has that guy ever played?
Maddening to have watched this game and just be like, so this is what we have to look forward to. Like immediately after he says he's staying, all of a sudden we start playing this way again.
Yeah. Again, it's, you know, we get the victory, but again, it's just it's short-sighted in the idea. Like you said, if you look at the box score, you're like 4-2. Okay, that seems pretty reasonable. But we were down 2-1, you know? We were down 2-1. So, again, and after that was after, like, what, three counters directly? You know, two shots on goal, two goals. So, again, last thing I want to touch on is, you know, going forward with Xavi and this idea of accountability, because this is something we've been talking about in our group chat and so forth, and majorly with Cancelo, because, you know, who knows if he's going to stay on for the season. I really hope they don't keep him on. I don't think he provides enough defensive value for us. But I can definitely see Xavi fighting for him to keep him on. But again, this idea of accountability, at what point, you know, I think this is one of the last things that Xavi's missing as a manager, is to make sure that players are accountable for their performances, you know, like with Cancelo's lack of defensive concentration, especially in that, oh my God, that PSG game. I've never seen such, oh my God, right? And also in the Clásico, the game-winning goal, you know, all he has to do is just see man, see ball. And he's like, doesn't do any of those things. Now, people will argue, sure, he's not there defensively because they're for the attacking. Okay, great. But to me, the left back, your first priority is defense. So what, you know, going forward, what are you hoping for that Xavi does with the accountability of putting this pressure on the team to be better professionals?
Look, I think the sad thing about accountability is it starts from the top, right? And I say that to say I haven't seen Xavi take accountability his whole time here. And it's another one of those little things that not a lot of people talk about or like really notice, but the amount of times Xavi comes out of a game and blames everything but his tactics, everything but if it's his tactics, that's why we lost, it's we suffered, you know. If it's his, I mean, like it's always his tactics, but it's typically we suffered or the refs or something of another. He doesn't take accountability. So I don't know how I expect the rest of the team to take accountability, right? Like, I don't – this idea that, like, you let Cancelo play after the last two games that he's had.
Yeah.
Like, for me, Hector fought all day, you know? Yeah. Like you can't do that. You can't have those lapses in concentration in two of our biggest games and still get to start. If you come in, you come in because like things weren't working out, because we're not like we couldn't be that much worse without you. If Cancelo hadn't been playing in the Clásico or the PSG game, I don't know if we would have done much worse, right? So it's like when you're talking about accountability, Xavi, it's not like I mean, even when you think of Lewandowski, like Vitor Roque hasn't played, hasn't gotten minutes. And of course, it's again, like you have a situation where it's really sad because we're down, you know, and it's hard to get him in on a game like this. But it's still like Lewandowski probably could have not started for a lot of these last couple of games. And it would have possibly been a similar situation, right? So he scores today and it's all good. But it's like, I don't think Xavi takes enough accountability himself to then preach accountability for others. So I don't know how I see that changing.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And you know, the thing is, the Vitor Roque situation is very troubling because the idea that they said we need a striker. They go and get the striker and he's played like what, 9 minutes? I mean, nothing. And like you said, give him a chance. Obviously, there's something going on in the behind the scenes of this, but man, the idea that we spend money on this player who's supposed to be a fantastic player from all things that I've said and stuff. Like, we need, like, you're telling me he couldn't get playing time tonight, you know?
I mean, I think the thing is, it's like, I mean, tonight I feel like it would have been harder just, I mean, I would have started him tonight given where things are, but I understand like not playing him when we were where we were, right? Like after halftime when we're down, you know, you're probably not going to take that chance there. The best thing that I've heard about the Vitor Roque situation is that, oh, he, you know, played a whole season in Brazil, was basically hurt when he got here. And like, perhaps it's just about the time. And like, but I'm saying that's the most positive I can come out of it because I think I was saying the other day, it feels weird. It feels like there's a possibility that they could have gotten him to try to flip him for money. Like remember what we did with Malcolm?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think that was more to screw over Roma, but like we ruined that kid and we end up trying to sell him later just a year after. Like, but I hope that's not what they do. I think it'd be really short-sighted to do that with Vitor Roque because like, again, Lewandowski's what, about to be 35, 36?
Yeah.
He doesn't have like two more seasons in him. Like, I don't know. I hope next season or to the rest of the games of the season, like things change with Vitor Roque, but I wouldn't put it past this club to have like bought him to flip him for bigger money, even though you'd have to still play him for clubs to like want to pay more money for him.
Exactly. You need to see something in the big boy league, you know. Obviously he was in the Brazilian league doing well, but yeah, you need to see something on tape to do something. And again, you know, with these players, you know, just looking at the roster again, you know, we'll have Balde coming back next season, so hopefully that already, and you know, maybe having Mikhail Efe as well on the left back, you go with the youngsters as opposed to I mean, to me, that left back, like for example, if I say to you Balde's playing in the PSG and the Clásico, do you think those mistakes are made?
No.
Exactly. Like I would say maybe could be one, but I don't think all of them, you know. Cancelo did, you know. Yeah. I have faith with Balde that he's, from what I've seen, and just kind of, I just think he's a better defender. He understands the positioning better, and it's a luxury that he can go forward. But again, I think he uses his speed really well to mark up when he can. So just, you know, looking at the squad, you know, obviously that's the other thing is that Victor Roque first. Say again.
I said Balde is a defender first.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And go forward. Exactly. But he chooses his time better. Cancelo seems to have an aversion for defense. Like he's a winger. Like Cancelo
yeah,
is
yeah.
a winger.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's a deep winger. Like
exactly. And that's the thing. So again, I you know, the other thing with the Victor Roque, just to close that and just kind of close the episode, is just the idea that, you know, he's occupying a roster spot. So for what we say to flip and stuff, it's like let's use him. Let's see what we got, you know?
I think we
already know what we have with Ferran. You know, I'm hoping just from the glimpses and seeing that Victor Roque is maybe what? Maybe 5% better than Ferran with a little bit more electricity, but I don't know.
Yeah, but also he's younger, so he has the potential, right?
Exactly.
The thing is, though, you know what I was just thinking about with Victor Roque is like, we fought so hard to get him here in January. If he had stayed in Brazil, he would have had more time and more ability to get better. Like we've taken him from a place where he was playing to bring him somewhere to sit. Like we just fought to get him here to sit him.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make sense. Like if we had let him stay, if we were going to do this, we should just let him stay and at least get the rest of the season in.
Yeah.
Like that would have made more sense to me. I mean, I obviously like you fear like picking up injuries and this and the other, but Barca felt very much like they were putting a lot of hope on him. And now that he's, I think that's what's weird about it, right? It's like, it felt like there was this like, oh, we're getting a Tigrino. Oh, how do, it's like, I know it's like Tiger. I can't remember how they say
it. Yeah,
like,
El Tigre.
Yeah, like, it's like, you know, there was all this like hype around it and all this like, we're trying to get him earlier and they don't want to let him go earlier and all this stuff. Like he was going to be, he was a marquee signing kind of thing.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden you're just like, he's like, Craig couldn't even remember him the other day. Like basically fading into the background. Right. So it's like, what happened there? Like, how?
Like, I really hope it doesn't happen. What happened to Saviola that came from Argentina. So he was almost like the same body type forward and he couldn't really find his spot. He was very talented, obviously, but he just couldn't find his groove with FC Barcelona, couldn't get enough playing time, and then he was out the door, you know? And I really hope, because the thing is, again, if there's a complete divide with Xavi and the sporting director guys with the players are going to get with this Victor Roque, then why even go forward with it? You know, like you said, everyone was so excited with the preamp of it, and now, like you said, it's just fading in the back, right? He's not even on the squad list, you know, barely. So that's
yeah, the thing. And it's not being talked about. There's no update. Yeah. It's not like, oh, you know what? Like we're giving him time to reintegrate, like this and the other. It's like you're just not talking about it, which is just a weird thing to do with a player that you hyped up that. Like if he were any other youngster that just came in and could go play for Barca B, like different story. But y'all brought him in as like the successor to Lewandowski, and sooner rather than later. And all of a sudden you don't talk about him. What's going on there? So I don't know. It just feels like there isn't a really good plan there. And my hope is that it doesn't end up happening the way that like Saviola, as you said, or like, I just hope the best for that situation. Hopefully the best case scenario is they're trying to give him a summer to reintegrate. And next year we're going to start seeing him a lot. Worst case scenario is they do something real stupid. But, you know. Yeah.
All right. Well, the next match is on Saturday, May 4th, against Girona at Girona. So as the season is winding down, really quick, we got Champions League this week. Who are you picking out of those two semifinals? We've got Bayern, Real Madrid, man. Who are you picking from that, from Bayern and Real Madrid?
I hope Bayern, obviously. Like, fuck Real. Left, right, but that Bayern team isn't good.
Correct.
Like,
but maybe that's also a positive, because maybe Madrid overlooks them, maybe, and the Bayern German efficiency. I don't know. I'm just trying to find anything, because as I put in the group chat, Madrid is the greatest Champions League team we've ever seen in the last 20 years. I mean, it's just insane what they've been able to do. Again, with, as we talked about, against Man City, they gave up all the possession stuff. But again, what you forget with Madrid is they're the most athletic gods you've ever seen. So when they run the counter, look out, you know. I think, you know, obviously I'll be hoping for Bayern, but I just, again, with Ancelotti's confidence and the way the team is just on another level of champions, I think it's an easy walkthrough for them.
Yeah, I don't see any of the remaining teams really challenging Real Madrid in any way. I mean, honestly, look, I don't hate PSG as much as everybody else does. I don't see them as like the rivalry that everybody else does. Sure. I think we could have beaten them. But if I had to pick a team that I would rather win the Champions League, Dortmund probably is the one that I least dislike the most. But Dortmund doesn't really have a chance to beat Real. Yeah. Bayern's the best hope, and if it's not Bayern to stop them, then it's PSG. But
again, remember, you know, I think PSG are going to advance through Dortmund. I just think they're a little bit more talented, but again, who knows? And I also think if PSG can get to the final, it's a one-off, and maybe Mbappe has a special night and PSG can pull that off, but who knows? I'll be watching it. I love champions, but again, it's,
you know, I told you this, new blood. It's so crazy because like the Man City Real tie, I was like, oh, that's such a good tie. I would want to watch that, but I hate watching Real Madrid in the Champions League so much for the reasons that like we saw in that Man City game. Like Man City should have won that game like four or five different ways, and somehow Real ended up winning it. And you're just like, they're good. By hook or crook, they're going to do it in some way. And most of the time it's by crook, but a lot of times it's just, they're just like, they really were just like, cool, have possession, do it. Like, we're going to be fine. And it's just, seeing them win.
I mean, I'll just end with this one. So I was watching the match at home, and of course, just watching the penalties, just listening to all the people scream in my street. I was just like, spare me. Like, I just can't, because I don't know if you know, but I live in the Real Madrid neighborhood. I'm like one metro stop away from the Bernabeu. So there's a lot of Madrid fans in my neighborhood. And when Madrid won the penalties, I was like, because I actually have the TV. So I my feed is the fastest, obviously. And I was telling my friend, I was like, Madrid scored the last, Rudiger scores the goal. And I'm like, 5, 4, 3, 2. And then I went, goodbye. So yeah, anyway, well, that does it for today. I mean, I don't want to take away from obviously getting the victory against Valencia, but man, it's just, you know, this upcoming season, I really hope, as we've highlighted, I just really hope Xavi takes some steps going forward just to increase or improve his just overall management, less red cards, better tactical inclusion, better player management and so forth. But who knows what will happen. Maybe he needs two weeks off in the summer. That'll recharge him.
Yeah, I mean, Girona is going to be an interesting one, because that's going to be the biggest test that we have for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah.
They handled us handedly last time. So this will be a real interesting, like, what is next year going to look like? Because, I mean, if you're Xavi, you just announced you're staying and you're about to, like, this game, he's going to come out of it and being like, oh, we won, everything was good, blah, blah, blah. But like, you have to be sitting there. Look, if I'm the board, I'm looking around like, this is an issue. Like, And if you lose to Girona properly, then I'm really like.
But remember, the board is just looking the bottom line, you know, and unfortunately, they're okay with it. You know, they know that Xavi's doing them a solid to bridge until they get to the new camp again. So,
yep. Winning always improves the bottom line. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, of course.
Playing good football is way. It's one of sports are one of the few things where how well you do at the business side of it never trumps the sporting side.
Correct.
Like, yeah. If you're not winning on the pitch or giving people an exciting thing to like care about and be happy about, it doesn't matter what you do on the financial back end. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Remy, good chat.
Always.
We'll talk soon. Have a good Monday, and a good rest of the week. We'll talk soon.
You as well. Forza Barca.
Sports Social Podcast Network.